Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Adventures of a Mom Patriot Talk Show. We have a packed show today as our special guest is Barbara Samuels. She's the co-founder of 912 Super Seniors. Barbara is an amazing patriot that has a passion and dedication to encouraging experienced Americans to engage in their communities and provide the wisdom of their lifetime experiences towards ensuring the preservation of our nation's basic freedoms and the opportunities of individuals. The 912 Super Seniors is an active group across the country and can be found at www.912superseniors.org. Welcome to the show, Barbara.
Oh, Karina, thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here and be talking with you and your listeners.
Well, what I would like to do, I want to start off by going over several of the things that are available on your website. Once again, that's 912superseniors.org. The one project that sticks out to me because I haven't experienced with it with as a mom is your COLA survey. And I know you guys are going to be starting that back up in May. Can you give a brief description of that?
Sure. We did that project. We were actually asked by Glenn Beck, as was the group As a Mom. We were asked by Glenn Beck if we would track grocery prices because at the time that he asked us to do this, the government was telling us there was 1.2% price inflation, and Glenn felt that that was not quite correct. And so we had 700 seniors respond to our request to help with this, and we gave them a list of 20 different grocery items that are commonly purchased to go out and price once a week. And we had a tremendous response, and of course not all 700 stayed with the project for the whole time, but we did it for 6 months, and we had so many people turning in their results that we did get good, valid results. And of course our results were not what the government was saying. And as we were going along with this project and I was researching how our government comes up with the cost of living adjustment for seniors and how they come up with their consumer price index, I could see why what we are seeing in the grocery store and at the gas pump is totally different from what our government can tell us, because they have so many different ways of calculating and computing each of these price indexes that they can pretty much pick and choose, you know, what result to show us. So it was very, very interesting. We did stop it after 6 months, but we're going to pick it up again now for 2 months. But at the end of 6 months, we did find that the inflation we tracked was 14.6%.
Wow. And, you know, and that's just playing fast and loose with the numbers. I mean, statistics, they can make numbers mean anything they would like. And so I know that personally, my grocery prices, I've been saying for about 5 years now, you know, I'll come home from the grocery store and my husband will say, how much have you spent? And it's just skyrocketed, especially in the last year.
Mm-hmm. I experienced the same thing you did. I started to see it go up a few years ago, and then just all of a sudden on hyperdrive. Like, for example, we tracked for those 6 months starting December 21st of 2010 for the 6 months going forward. For example, American cheese, 16-ounce package of American cheese went up 34.1%. And
wow.
Eggs up 8%. And let me look at a few other things here. Orange juice, 8.8%. I mean, these are astronomical. Even something as simple as spaghetti was up 6.1%, and bread up 10%, and, you know, it just went on and on and on. And so we did include gasoline in our tracking because everyone was, of course, buys gasoline. And not only do we buy it, but it affects the cost of everything we use. Well, the gasoline increase, when we last stopped the tracking, gas was selling at an average of $3.51 a gallon. Wouldn't we love to go back to that now? But that was a 20% increase in 6 months.
Well, and you mentioned a good point. What I don't think what a lot of people understand is when the gas prices go up, they feel it like immediately at the pump. But what they're not focusing on is everything that goes to stores is being shipped. And it takes gas prices, you know, to get the products to the stores. And that's how our overall prices are just going through the roof.
Absolutely. And that gasoline and the energy that goes into producing those products before they even put them on the truck to bring them to us, all the energy that goes into that has increased also. And this has to do with the energy policy that's being pursued now that is intentionally driving the prices of energy up to the detriment of all of us. It's a very effective and brutal way of redistributing wealth. It takes from the very poorest, and they are the hardest hit. I had seniors, when we started this, I had seniors writing me and telling me that they don't even go down the produce aisle of the store anymore because they can't afford fresh produce. And people had to cut way back on how often they could go to the grocery store. So they had to decide, you know, can I go to the grocery store or can I go to church this weekend? You know, I need to go to my doctor, so that means I can't go visit my children. And those kinds of decisions are very real decisions, especially for seniors who are on fixed incomes and seniors who are living on Social Security and nothing else, because this increase in the cost of energy hits them so, so hard.
That's true. I mean, and even we had a recent kerfuffle in the media about stay-at-home moms not knowing about economic issues. And that's one of the huge issues that stay-at-home moms have with, you know, whether we're going to take our kids to the park or the library, or just issues of, like you said, going to the store, deciding where we're going to go. So that to me was quite a disturbing statement that was being played out in the media.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was absurd. That was the height of absurdity, but it did get a lot of attention and it did distract people, and it still is kind of distracting them from the real issue, which is this administration's policies. So
Right. Whether
they want to distract us with something like that or with this the issue with the Secret Service now or the pink slime. There are just so many things, and the Trayvon case is a perfect example of that. There are so many things that deserve a certain amount of attention, but are given incredibly inordinate amounts of attention, and some of that, I feel, is manipulated by this administration and our media to keep our attention away from the gas prices, the horrible jobs situation, the way that businesses are closing right and left, and those that have stayed in business are afraid to expand, afraid to take on new employees. They're just hunkered down and hoping that this administration is going to go away with its policies that are so detrimental to business, as well as to families, but to business, which, of course, is the basis of our economy.
Well, and something else that I've noticed over the past few years is, and this has caused teenage unemployment to skyrocket, is a lot of our seniors are having to go back into the workforce. And, you know, they're taking the jobs that, for example, when I was a teenager, I just knew that I was going to be a cashier at the local grocery store because that's what you did in my family anyway. When we turned 16, we got a car, and then we obviously needed to pay for our bills, so we got a job. And now our teenagers are just not having productive ways to use their time, which is damaging to the society as a whole. And our seniors, bless their hearts, they've worked all their lives, and now they're having to go back into the workforce again.
Right. That's something that I see too. In the small town where my parents live in Ohio, there was one grocery store, and it was there forever. It was the grocery store I shopped at when I was a kid. Well, it closed about a year ago. and the economy drove it out of business. Excuse me. And the lady, she and her husband owned that grocery store for years. They took it over from his father. And so now she works as a cashier in the next town at the Walmart store. I saw her when I was visiting the last time. And you're right. This is exactly what's happening. People who are at a time in their life where they were retired, and now they can spend their time taking care of the things that they enjoy, gardening, taking care of their house, being with their children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, contributing to their churches and to their communities, and being active and involved. Now they're so worried about running out of money. And so, yeah, those who can are looking for any kind of job that they can take, and they're taking it. And, yes, that hurts. That hurts our whole economy. It hurts our whole society, because certainly just as you worked as a young person, I did too. And there were plenty of jobs to be had. And those jobs are so important, not only in bringing money into the family and letting the teenager understand what it is to handle money and be responsible to an employer. That's such a valuable lesson. But it's also important in these young people understanding what they want to do with their lives, because the work experience that they have is so important in giving them a taste of what it is to work in this kind of business or do that kind of a job, and they see the people who are their employers and what they do, and they learn from all that, and that's being lost also.
True. Now, when I first met you, I remember when I first met you, I believe it was at the beach, and with Debbie Lane, she was such a generous host, and you had a senior pamphlet for seniors to take into their doctor's office. Do you still have that on your website?
That has been, we thought we would be changing that every couple of weeks or so. We have never changed it because there's not been a need to change it. And our seniors are still taking that out everywhere they go. They go to our website, and we get emails back of people telling us the success they have with it. On our homepage of our website is a big arrow, and it says senior pamphlet. And seniors can click there. Anybody can click there, because, after all, this doesn't apply only to seniors. But anybody can click there and print out a short pamphlet. What it is, it's just three of some of the most egregious things that are being visited upon us by the new health care law, by the changes in health care. And we headed it up with the title, Can Your Doctor Afford to Keep You? Because very soon after this health care law was put into place, doctors and hospitals and clinics and so forth, all health care providers, had to start seeing how they could plan to survive this new health care law, how they could plan to stay in business, to take care of their patients, and to continue their mission and to continue their careers and so forth. And as they're doing that, what has happened is doctors some of them are not seeing any more Medicare patients. Some of them are limiting their Medicare patients. They see what's happening with the Medicare reimbursements being so low. They were low previously. They expect them to go even lower, not to increase at all. And so it's not a question of, as the president said to us, if you like your doctor, you can keep him. That's not the issue. The issue is, can your doctor afford to keep you? And indeed, a lot of them cannot, and that's only going to get worse. So that's why we started this pamphlet with this, Can Your Doctor Afford to Keep You? Because who would have thought that that would be a problem in getting good health care? But certainly it is. And so that pamphlet, we ask people to take it out with them to their doctor's offices and show it to their doctor. And we've had many doctors who will take this and say, I'm going to copy it and put it in my waiting room with the magazines, or I'm going to put this on the bulletin board. Doctors share it with their physician friends and with their families. We have people who take it when they go to a hospital to visit someone or go to a dental appointment, anywhere where they know people are sitting and looking for something to read, and they leave a couple of them with the magazines. And it gives people the information about the shortage of doctors, which is now a problem in this country. It's due to become a critical problem in a very few years, and, you know, a few of those points. So that's the kind of things we do at our website. We try to give seniors a very real way to go out and inform other seniors and inform their family and their friends about things that will be helpful for everyone to know and to be able to act on.
Well, and another good idea is, even if some of the listeners don't consider themselves a senior, you'll be able to go to 912superseniors.org and maybe download something for your parents to read that are seniors, and maybe educate them a little bit better. For example, my mom's family, they've been Democrats since they were born, and they think that a lot of what I do is very odd because they were raised, you know, being told that the Democrats are for the working man. And this doesn't even have to be a partisan issue because, in my opinion, a lot of whatever letter is behind your name, it's a lot of the same things going on. But the people that their parents might not understand what they're doing, you can go to 912 Super Seniors and possibly get some information that might resonate with them better.
Right, and when we put together this Super Seniors and we put together the website, we very much had that in mind because part of our website, one of the things it tells you there, and we stress, is each one find one, because we're saying to seniors, reach out to your friends who are not internet connected, who don't have the ability that you have to get up-to-date information and to get just volumes of information on anything you want. So we ask the seniors, each one find one, print out an article, and take it to your friends, take it to your senior club, take it to your church meetings and so forth. And certainly for children to go in, adult children and even teenagers, to go in and print out things for their parents or their grandparents. We have on our homepage, we replace them every few days, some latest articles in the news. And these are particularly worthwhile. I'm just looking at what's up there now. The first one says, the Catholic bishops will not abandon freedom of religion for tax exemptions. And the next article says, Obama's medical mercenaries. And then the third one is about cheap natural gas heralds an energy revolution. So what we do is we try to keep topics in here that relate to things seniors are concerned about, medical care, energy, and so forth. And we try to get articles that they might not see someplace else. So we have those up there. And another thing that we have that is unique on our site, we have a choice where people can go to the top of the homepage and click on where it says Power of One. The tab for Power of One, that was put there specifically to address seniors who might be homebound, either because of their health issues or because they have a spouse or another family member that they have to take care of, and they don't get outside the home very much, and they're frustrated because they see on television, they hear on radio, things going on that they know are not right, that they know are harmful to our country, are harmful to our citizens, and they feel there's nothing they can do. So we put up the Power of One there just to reassure these seniors that, first of all, it says a power to be dealt with. Start with one American patriot who had a traditional education and American values, who is blessed with close family ties, who has cherished lifelong friends, who fought and sacrificed for our freedoms, who carries the lessons of a lifetime's ups and downs, and you end with a mature, motivated, determined 912 super senior. So we address with that, and then on the page we talk about what people can do who are at home and how they can use the website and how they can influence those around them, those they come in contact with, those they speak to on the phone, those they might see in church, people who come to visit them. Just because they're limited in their accessibility to the outside world doesn't mean that they don't have a real voice in what's going on.
Well, and I really like it that you on your website, you also have suggestions about meeting content and identifying meters, because a lot of people don't naturally move in that direction, and it's nice to have some reference to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know how that came about. When the group was first started, and it initially was begun with a group down in Florida when I was spending the winter down there, and I came up here to New York, and a friend gave me two tickets to the Glenn Beck Show. And so I went into Manhattan with my daughter, and we were going to be in the audience of the Glenn Beck Show. And it's kind of a long story, but I ended up, Glenn's producer asked me just before the show, I had very little notice, if I would talk about the 9/12 Super Seniors. So I thought, I've never done that, I can't do that. And then I had a second thought, and I said, when you have an opportunity like this, there's 2.5 million people watch that show every day, I must speak. And I did. And as a result, thousands and thousands of people came to the web. I think that night, if I'm remembering the numbers, the night that they aired the show, there were 25,000 people who came to our website that night between the time the show aired and like midnight when I turned off my computer and went to bed. And so what we did was people were asking, please, we want to find one of these groups, we want to start it. So we put up extensive information on the website so that anyone that wants to start a local 9/12 Super Seniors group can go right to the website and find anything they need there. And then people will also email us and say, what about this, what about that? So that's why we put up all that information there, to empower people to really go out on their own and start their own local group.
Well, and that saves you from answering thousands of emails that I know you were probably getting at the time, too.
Yes. And you know what? That was what really shocked me, because when they aired the show 3 days after it was taped in the studio, I was sitting here at home watching, and I had my computer in front of me, and I had it on my email account. And so now I'm watching the show, and pretty soon I'm talking, and I'm watching myself speak, and I'm like, oh, boy. And, what am I going to say next? Because you have no idea what you said. And because it's all off the cuff. And then they put up the website, 912superseniors.org. And I thought, this is great. People will go to the website. This is great. What I didn't realize is that a lot of those people went to the website and through the website sent emails. And I had my email account up. For what reason, I don't know. I didn't know this would happen. All of a sudden, the first email, the second email, now 10, now they're just rolling. And I had never seen a computer page roll like that. It rolled through hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of emails. I will tell you, it took me 3 months, but I answered every one of those emails. And it was quite a job. But I was determined to answer every one, and I did. I did.
Well, funny story, with Asmon, whenever we would find out if Lori was going to be on Glenn's show, we would get a team together to approve memberships, because, I mean, just his reach just goes that far. And they were coming in at thousands at a time, and it was kind of fun because we were all in chat at the same time, and we're spread out all over the country, but we're still a sisterhood. So.
Yes. I can begin to imagine, having been through some of that. I can begin to imagine, and you're just like shocked, and your eyes get really big, and you're happy, but you're shocked all at the same time.
Right. I really like the idea of going, when you're saying about being interviewed, I like the idea that you have a 30-second elevator speech on your website, too. That's a perfect way to reach out to people, like when you're standing in line at the grocery store or whatever.
We just had here in my community here in New York a local 9/12 Super Seniors meeting yesterday. And we talked about our 30-second speeches, and we had three new members there yesterday, and one of them said, what do you mean by that? And I said to her, well, we talked about the need to reach outside our own groups, and speak to people who are not already awakened to what is happening to their freedoms and the prosperity. And so I said to her, what we do is each of us have different issues that we're passionate on. So we asked everyone to think about an issue that really concerns them and then research it and come up with one or two facts and use that when you have an opportunity to strike up a conversation. And that's something that a lot of seniors are very good at, whether you're in a grocery store, if you're in another kind of store, if you're sitting in a waiting room in a doctor's office, riding in an elevator even is the perfect thing. Here you are at the hospital to visit a friend. You know, you get on the elevator and someone's got fresh flowers that they're bringing. And there's the perfect thing. If energy is one of your passions and one of your concerns, and you can say, wow, look at those beautiful flowers. You know, I just bought flowers the other day for my sister, whatever it might be, and I was amazed at how the price had gone up. And I was talking to the florist, and he told me all the prices have gone up because the price of fuel has gone up so much. You know, and strike up a conversation back and forth with people. The point of it is, number one, to make a point about the policies in our government right now that are hurting, for example, the price of energy. And then the other thing is sometimes you get somebody that you really get into a conversation with, and then you can say to them, you know what, I belong to a group here in my community, and we get together and we have lunch and we talk about our concerns about energy and about jobs and about the spending and so forth. Would you like to join us? And so in addition to informing that person and giving them other facts, they may want to come and sit and be part of your group. And so that's why the 30-second elevator speech is very important. And it was so funny, Karina. When we first started talking about this, there were a lot of people in this local group who were like, oh, I can't do that. I can't. Well, you know what? Now they all do it. And because at our meeting, after we first talked about it, at our next meeting, a couple of people said, can I try out my elevator speech? And we said, of course. Well, once a couple of them did, everyone else kind of caught on to really how easy this is. And so now everybody does it. And we put it out there. When I'm asked to speak at 9-12 groups or Tea Party groups, or I speak at Republican clubs and so forth, I always bring up the 30-second speech because I think it's something that we all need to be able to do, and it serves us very well. And we just have to be careful. I mean, we have an opinion that everything is way too expensive, but we also need a fact or two to throw in there that is an objective fact, because that's the meat of the conversation that may well hook that person.
Exactly. And you know, Barb, it's all about building relationships, because the politicians in D.C. and the establishment, they it seems to me that they prefer us divided. And there's so many issues that affect every American that we can agree upon. So it's that 30-second speech basically just breaks the ice, and it's the beginning of building a relationship with your fellow American.
You're absolutely right, and I think you hit something so important there, a key point, that as long as they can keep us divided, look at the racial divide now. I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, I felt our country had come so far in putting racial division and racial consciousness really behind us, and now we've gone back further than I can, you know, further than I can remember in that. So that we're very divided in that way. And then at one point, this administration put out a lot of things. They were trying to get a generational war going. Now, they haven't been very successful in that, but I think OWS is taking that up also. And when I say a generational war, they would put out things about greedy geezers, about seniors wanting their Medicare at the expense of their great-grandchild's medical care. Outrageous things. But it was put out there, and I was watching it very closely. I saw it in the New Yorker magazine, and I saw articles different places about the selfish generation actually being the me generation, actually being the seniors and things like that. So, you know, that's just one part of politicians trying to divide and conquer and have us attack each other. instead of look at the economy, look at the lack of jobs, look at the out-of-control spending, look at the real, real issues, look at the government waste, look at the corruption. I mean, that goes on and on and on, but, you know, they don't want that looked at.
Right.
So they'd rather have us fight each other than fight them.
It's another distraction tactic.
Yes.
Do you still have the YouTube video on the Super Seniors? I've been looking for it, and it's the one, I believe, where you were using salt and pepper shakers.
Yes. That's still up on YouTube. And interestingly enough, it's even though it was put up there a while ago, I'm just looking for it right here, it was very relevant then, and it still is. And it's if you go to YouTube and you search on Obamacare Explained with Condiments, it will come up, yeah. Or you can look under Health Care Reform Explained with Condiments, and it will come up. And that came from having lunch with one of my adult daughters, and she said, you know, I don't understand. She said, I hear the news here and there, and she said, and all this going on about health care, I don't understand. So I said, well, you know what, while we're waiting for our cheesecake here, let's just talk about it a little bit. So I grabbed the salt shaker and the pepper shaker and the sugar bowl and whatever else was on the table, and I started explaining to her. And she said to me, that helped me so much. She said, you have to let me record that, and we'll put it up on YouTube. And I was like, what? Say what? And she talked to me about it a little more, and she said, well, Mom, it's so clear when you put it that way. So I said to her, fine, yeah, sure, we'll do it. And I intended to do it, but I forgot about it. And then one day she was visiting, and just before she left, she said, Mom, we have to record your little talk on health care. So I said, okay, all right. I was in the midst of doing laundry. There's a pile of laundry behind me in the video, and I sat down at the kitchen table, and just what you said, I pulled the salt shaker, the pepper shaker, I got some spice bottles out of the cupboard and, you know, and went ahead with it. And interestingly enough, just recently I spoke down in Florida at Palm Beach County Tea Party, and I did that same explanation, which I'd never done it before when I was speaking. I did the same thing, but I didn't use salt and pepper shaker. I called people up. I had people come up, and each one of them, I said, you're 10% of the American population, and you represent 10%, and you represent 10%. You know, so here we have all of America. And then I went through the whole thing, and I said, you know, and I counted, and I said, you 80%, and half of you, so you need to stand sideways, you are all already covered by insurance before Obama came into office. You know, so I went ahead with the explanation actually using people, and I got good feedback from that it really did make the point very clear that, in fact, all of this disruption of our whole medical system is taking place over 5% of Americans who are not insured, not 15%, because the 15% includes illegals. It includes people who are eligible for government health care but just haven't signed up. It includes people who can afford to have health care but choose not to. It includes a lot of young adults who don't want health care no matter what, whether they can well afford it or not. They just don't want it there. They call them the invincibles. Once you take that out, that takes 10% of the uninsured. We're really only left in this country with 5% that are uninsured, and most of those are people with pre-existing conditions. So instead of looking at our health care and saying, you know, we need to cut some costs, and we're going to do that incrementally with tort reform and with letting people have portability of insurance and shop for insurance across state lines, instead of saying that and knowing that with those savings we could fund health care or subsidize health care for this 5%, instead of doing that, this administration has taken over the whole health care scene in the whole country and are slicing and dicing our health care, and it will be redistributed in a way that 5 years from now you will not believe how your health care has changed, and we will all be heartsick for the health care that we have today.
Well, and the big fallacy that bothered me the most, my brother is an emergency medicine physician up in Ohio, and I know of hospitals around in my area, they can't turn you away. I mean, they if you walk in and you've got a broken arm or you're in an emergency situation, if you don't have insurance, they have to at least stabilize. Mm-hmm. The fallacy that people are dying on the street because they don't have health care is false. So I mean,
I was just at a meeting. I was just at a Democrat meeting in Florida, and someone actually said that. A man in the audience said there was a Democrat candidate for the House of Representatives who was speaking about health care and how, and the candidate said that the Republican Party wants to end Medicare and seniors will suffer. And this man, and bless him, he had to be 85 to 90 years old. He said, if we elect Republicans, we will have people dying in the streets. People will be dying in the streets. And to me, the man sounded a little senile, but you know what? The politician agreed with him.
Right.
And how disgraceful to have that kind of commentary go on and be allowed. That is just unacceptable. Just unacceptable, disgraceful.
Well, I want to take some time to go over your new project because I know you're really excited about it, and I'm excited about it too. Do you have a name for the project, or?
Well, we haven't really. It's religious freedom advocacy is the closest I'll come to an overall name for the project. And it's in response to this administration's mandate from the HHS on every employer now being required to offer insurance and pay for insurance for their employees that will provide not only contraception but abortion-inducing medications. And the fact that this was applied indiscriminately, regardless of church doctrine, of course, affects the Catholic Church hugely. And that's what brought this about, because we all know, no matter what religion we are, that if any religion in this country is denied the right to practice their doctrines, it is going to come to affect every religion eventually. And especially a huge, huge assault like this, a front page assault on the Catholic Church, is really throwing down a gauntlet. And this administration is saying, we don't have to pay attention to the First Amendment. We don't have to pay attention to your doctrines and your freedom of religion. That's irrelevant because we can do what we want to do, and we are going to do it. And so, in response to that, what we're doing here in New York, and now it is spreading to upstate New York, Ohio, and Florida, I know, are doing it. And today I had a contact from Pennsylvania. So it looks like some people are going to start this same thing there, is we're going out to each parish. And within each parish, we are asking permission to form a religious freedom advocacy group. And the way we're doing that is we have a lot of Tea Party and 912 groups here in New York, and I live on Long Island, and we're asking in the meetings, going to the meetings and the rallies, and asking for members of the groups who are already active in a parish to step up and volunteer to lead this effort in their parish. And we're asking them to go to their pastor and tell their pastor, I've been a member of this parish for 20, 30, 40 years, however long, and I'm very concerned about the HHS mandate and the assault that is on our religious freedom. And I've heard Cardinal Dolan and I've heard the American Council of Bishops speak out and say that it is the role of the laity here to act and to speak and to be involved in the political arena to protect freedom of religion. And so I'm asking my pastor if I can schedule an initial meeting in the parish to start a freedom of religion advocacy group, a group that will not be tied or named in no political party, no political candidate, no 912 group, no Tea Party group. It is strictly within that parish to empower those parishioners to work for advocating their religious freedom. And then we know what's going to happen is that these groups that are started, and some people here are going to start them in their synagogues, once these groups are initiated, they are going to reach out to the other faith communities in their area and ask them to join hands and to be involved and to work together so that we can protect every American's First Amendment right to freedom of religion.
Well, and that's vital. I mean, and I one of my favorite quotes is those, and I'm going to paraphrase it, those that don't know history are doomed to repeat it. Because back in Germany, you know, they just gradually started attacking segments of their society, and everybody, you know, the other people are like, okay, well, I'm not a socialist, so I don't have to worry about that, or I'm not a trade unionist, and then they came for them, and no one else was there to rescue them. What is shocking to me, Barb, is that this administration would so boldly go after the Catholic Church. I mean, the Catholic Church is just a massive, powerful, you know, force in many communities and worldwide. So it's, if they're that bold to go after the Catholic Church and their freedom to practice their religion, it's almost like the other religions better get on board to help. You know what
exactly,
I'm saying?
Exactly. You're right. You're right. It does show incredible arrogance. Incredible arrogance. But you know, Karina, as you were saying that, I was thinking about the incredible arrogance we saw with pushing this health care law, that those people in the administration and who had the majority in the House, in Congress, had the White House, they knew the majority of Americans did not want this. They did not want Americans to read it, to know what was in it. They just wanted it passed. And they had the arrogance to use our own money to bribe other politicians to pass this bill that they knew we didn't want. So we saw that arrogance in a huge way already. And I guess it was just unthinkable that it would come in such an outright, direct way against our freedom of religion. But this really has been the pattern of this administration, incredible arrogance in trampling upon the well-being and even the very rights of our citizens of this country.
Exactly. I mean, it doesn't... Even if you're not a Catholic, you should be very afraid that an unelected official, the Department of Health and Human Services, has come up with this rule that affects the freedom, our First Amendment right, I mean, to religious freedom. The Founding Fathers, I mean, that was huge. That's why they were escaping from England, because, I mean, they were adamant about not having a national religion.
Yes, yes. And, you know, there's a very good piece that was written by Chris Ann Hall, a friend of ours, and it's about exactly that. It's about what our founders knew had happened in England. They knew their history well. And in the colonies here, they had seen religious persecution because ministers were required to have licenses from the mother country and were required to preach certain doctrines. And if they didn't, they were beaten. There were cases where they died, where they were killed. And so when our founders were forming the Constitution, they were determined to protect freedom of religion and to keep the government out of religion, never to keep God out of the government, but not to have a state religion where the government can come in and do exactly what we're talking about now, what we're seeing right now, which is to define how people can worship, what they must believe, and how, whether they can practice their doctrines or not. And yes, that is such a critical part. It's the first part of our very First Amendment, first part of our Bill of Rights, and in that First Amendment, freedom of religion comes first, and that was, we know that was very deliberately done that way.
Right. I have a question from the chat room. It says, what are the super seniors' plans for this this advocacy group? Do you plan to take it nationwide?
It is going nationwide. That's what we hope for. It is going nationwide. People can come to our website, and at 912superseniors.org, on the homepage, there is a, right towards the top of the homepage, right under the picture of me with Glenn Beck from when I was on his show on March 12th out in Dallas, right under that picture, there's a section that says Inquiring Seniors Want to Know. And the first item under there is action items. It says action items, seniors standing up to make a difference. If people click on that, that's going to take them to a page where we list different action items that seniors can take. And the 30-second elevator speech is there. The healthcare videos are there. And then number 5 of the action items is work within your own church community to protect religious freedom from the assault against one church, which, if allowed to stand, will embolden even more massive assault on our right to worship. So people can go there and read a very short description of this, and then they can email us. And if they email us, we'll send them the materials that we have prepared for this purpose, because what we decided in working with other Patriot leaders on Long Island is to make this as easy as possible for volunteers who are willing to lead in their parish. And to do that, we've prepared a few things. For one thing, we have a suggested script for them to go and speak to their pastor. People can look at it. It's like 5 sentences long, and they can decide if they want to use it or if they want to say something else. But it makes it easy for them to at least have a starting point. Then the other thing is that we've prepared is if the pastor says, well, what are you going to do at this first meeting? We have prepared, and I will send anyone who wants it, the outline that we have of very specific, it's actually more than an outline. You could run the first meeting by just reading through it. And what it does is it starts with what is the First Amendment, and then it starts with a little bit of history of religious tyranny, and then it goes into the HHS mandate, as Cardinal Dolan explained it. And there's no opinion in this. It's all from our First Amendment, from the Constitution. It's all from Cardinal Dolan's words. It's all from the Council of Catholic Bishops. It's from a local priest on Long Island, what he wrote, because we want it to be very clear to the pastor and to the people in the parishes that this is not partisan driven. This is driven by the true attack on our First Amendment freedom of religion. So we're hoping that this will go across the whole country. And the fact that I got an email today and it's going to go out in Pennsylvania, so that's the 4th state that I know of. So I hope it's going to go out to many more states.
Well, that brings up a good topic. I'm just going to give you a little hint. Lisa lost her voice this morning, and so she's in chat room helping me out. And she's asking questions in chat room, so I want to give a shout out to Lisa.
Hi, Lisa. Hi.
And I hope she feels better.
Hi, Lisa. Yes. Cool. Yes.
But she's really excited about having you on, and because she attends a Baptist church in Mobile, and she was hoping that are the materials going to be applicable to where she can take it to the Southern Baptist conference, go to them about it. Will that be available or?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You know what? Anyone that is following what's going on knows that because the Catholic Church has been so boldly attacked, the Cardinal Dolan of New York has spoken out in response very boldly also. And so, you know, the things that we put here are directly from Cardinal Dolan and directly from the bishops. And so anyone, no matter what faith you are, you know, will be aware of this. Certainly all the clergy are aware of this. And I think that this would be useful in any situation.
Okay. I have a question. Just from my experience with trying to speak to my church leadership, I kind of got the response that they didn't want to offend any of their members. Are you getting any feedback of the church leadership pushing back on the people that want to start these groups?
Well, we've just begun this, and I have to say that we have a few people who had started in their parishes talking to their pastors about other things, and then when we came up with this idea, now they just transitioned. But these pastors were already concerned and were already talking to the members of our groups, and I'm thinking of three parishes in particular. So there's going to be no problem there with starting the groups. Now, we know that there will be some churches and some synagogues and so forth that will not, you know, under any circumstances, they just won't hear you. However, we also feel that going in as we are completely nonpartisan, and this is to be completely in the control of that faith community, in my case, my local Catholic church, this group is going to be completely there, formed of parishioners within that parish. We feel it's very nonpartisan, non-threatening to the church's, totally non-threatening to the church's tax-exempt status. And we are getting some good responses. Now, this past weekend at our Tax Day Tea Party rally, we had actually 50 parishes. People signed up who belong to 50 different parishes. However, 10 of those people's contact is so illegible. I don't think I can find them. But so we know we ended up with 40 parishes where we have solid volunteers to go there. And then last night I was at another meeting and I got another 6 parishes covered. So we will know within 2 weeks, because last night I was up all night putting the finishing touches on the materials for the first meeting. And so we'll know within 2 weeks what kind of a response we have. And we already said those pastors who are resistant, don't want, we're fine. You know, we're going to walk away. That's fine, because there are other pastors we know will let us do it. And what will happen is, if my pastor allows us to form a group in the church and we have another liberal pastor just a few miles away, and we suspect he's not going to, but we have friends in that parish, and we'll say to them, come over to our parish. We're going to have a meeting next week where we're talking about how we can advocate as parishioners to protect our freedom of religion. They will come. And then not only will they come, but they'll go back to their church and they'll talk to their friends there and tell them about the group we have going. And so pretty soon this pastor is going to have a lot of his parishioners saying, we want to have one of these groups. And he may well then allow it. And even if he never does, they can come to our meetings or they can go to another parish's meetings and they can work hard. So we know that we won't get every church, but as many as we can get, that's what we're trying for.
Well, and it's all, once again, it goes back to planting a seed. You absolutely want to have that conversation with your pastor or your preacher and plant the seed and provide them with all the information that they can review. And, you know, in the past few years, I've learned my lesson because I tend to, in my youth, I tended to say, oh, never mind, God, I got it handled. What he wants us to do is go out there and speak the truth, and then he'll handle the rest. And I have faith in that. But we're not to be quiet, though. We have to speak.
Yes, we have to speak. And, you know, now that you're asking about the ministers and so forth, it just brings to mind, after our rally last Sunday, a man in one of the Tea Party groups came up to me and he said that his minister just doesn't want to talk about this. And he asked me if he could videotape me, he had his video camera, if he could ask me some questions and if I would answer them and send a message to his minister, and then he's going to give it to some other people. So I said, yes, I would. So even though I looked like I had been in a wind tunnel for those 3 hours, nonetheless, I sat on a cement bench and he interviewed me for about 8 minutes. And I will send you that. He just put that up on YouTube. And even though I do look like I'm in a wind tunnel, it's not, I guess, about how I look. It's about what I had to say. And I had to say some things that really would be applicable to any minister or any parish, really, in addressing the issue of how do you protect your right to practice your religion. And as a clergy member, how do I do the best for my my congregation to help ensure that this freedom will be preserved?
Exactly. I mean, because it's not just in the churches. If they're invading our homes as well. I mean, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And freedom of religion is not just freedom of worship. And Cardinal Dolan pointed this out. I never really thought of it that way. But freedom of religion encompasses being able to practice our religion in the world, where to take it out into our communities, to take it out in our social life, in our schools, in our workplace, as long as we're not imposing it on anyone else. So if people had no choice but, you know, to follow my doctrine, that would not be freedom of religion for anyone. But because I'm free to go out and speak about my religion and practice it, you know, outside of church, I have true freedom of religion because I can live my life as a Catholic or as a Lutheran or as a Jew or whatever it may be. But the freedom to worship is a very narrow freedom. And they did have freedom to worship in Germany for a long time, but religion could not come outside the churches. And then gradually the crucifixes were replaced with the pictures of Hitler, and the state there was meant to be the religion.
Right. So are you suggesting that that you hold these meetings in your parish, in your churches?
Yes, they'll be in the parishes. We're asking the priests to put them in the bulletin. We're asking the ministers to announce them, put them in the bulletin. We will go in, we who went to speak to the pastor, we'll go in and, you know, we'll organize the first meeting. As I say, we have all the information for that, for anyone that wants it. And then from there, we know that other people in the parish are going to step up and join us, and that very soon, if we who started it want to step out and have other work we need to do, we can. We don't intend to lead these groups, control them, or anything. What we do want to do is empower parishioners to get started with this, to learn about their freedoms, how their freedoms are under assault, and to help them learn how to act to protect those freedoms.
That's terrific. So you're going to be putting up these items on 912superseniors.org?
Mm-hmm. Well, as I say, all that's up there now is under action items. There's a brief description of it.
Okay.
And I'm not a web designer, so I'm not good at posting big things like that. But yes, we will put it up on the website, and we will put it under that action item so that people will be able to find it. And people can also email us at 912superseniors@gmail.com with any questions. And, you know, we have enough people to, wouldn't it be wonderful if we got thousands of emails and we had to just sit all night, every night, all of us, answering them, because people want to try this in their churches. That would be wonderful.
That would be very inspiring. I would I would be walking 3 feet off the ground if that happened. That'd be neat.
Let's hope so.
I do want to emphasize, because you said this, but I do want to emphasize it again, that this is issue related. It's based on our First Amendment right to freedom of religion. And it has nothing to do with party affiliation or candidate-related activity. This is
absolutely, absolutely. It is not that kind of an effort at all. Although I know our president recently came out wanting congregation captains within the churches to do this, that, or the other thing, and to do specific work for him. This is not that kind of thing. This is totally based on protecting our constitutional freedoms. And this belongs in the churches, because all of us who want the freedom to worship and want our children to have the freedom to worship and the freedom to practice our religion must defend it. We see that now. And we know that what happens, that if there are governments who wish to take away that right and control us and have the power over how we practice our faith and our doctrines, we know that our freedoms will soon be gone. So this is strictly, strictly issue-driven freedom of religion, nonpartisan.
Well, that was great. And, man, did that hour fly past or not? I mean,
mm-hmm.
wow.
Mm-hmm.
I really appreciate you coming on today, Barbara. And I will send you the recording of this show if you want to put it up on your website. And
Thank you.
I look forward to hearing updates from you, and I look forward to chatting with you. Have a great day, everybody, and thanks again, Barbara.
Okay, Karina, bye-bye.
Bye.